Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm on, when I'm
home. Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the Purslam podcast here on Patreon, ad-free or with ads on the main feed on Friday. My name is Kenny, joined as always by Mr. Finlay Martin. Finn, how are you doing today?
Kenny, I'm doing all right. The sun's shining. I've finished Inside the Ropes magazine. Well, not obviously all by myself. I finished my contributions to ITR magazine. So I'm feeling pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. We put our tickets on sale last night for Trish Stratus in Glasgow in London, and the response has been pretty good. So I'm looking forward to those shows. And yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling. I don't have the January blues. I know some people tend to have. I'm going to get my passport renewed tomorrow in time for WrestleMania, which means that what I'd forgotten about was I need to go and get the photo taken today. Which all means, right. You know, that's the photo that's going to be with me for the next 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So I need to, you know, see what I can do to this mug to make it a bit less Glaswegian, a bit more bearable. But anyway, yeah, so I'm good. But there's lots of news, as there always is, for us to get into. And we should kick it off with, we now know what Sting's last match is going to be. His last match at Revolution is going to be him teaming with Darby Allin, which is what we pretty much knew it was going to be. But the opponents made their presence known last night on Dynamite after Sting and Darby had beaten Powerhouse Hobbs and Takeshita. And the opponents are the Young Bucks, Finn.
Oh, yes, they're back.
They're back.
Back from holiday.
Back from another holiday. They've got a lot of holidays, the Bucks. And it's provided a mixed response online, as you can imagine. So what do you think of them as the opponents? And if not them, who would you have put in their place if they are not the opponents you would like it to be?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people thought, I mean, firstly, I don't like them as Sting and Darby Allin's opponents. People will already know that. I mean, I don't like the Young Bucks. I don't want to watch them wrestle. If that indeed is what they do in the ring, I just don't want to watch their tumbling and trampolining. And I think those two, as opponents of Sting and Darby in Sting's last match, March 3rd Revolution, I mean, the event's already, it hasn't sold out. It's pretty damn close. I can understand why there's been a mixed response. I think people will be pretty upset. I thought a lot of people figured it was going to be Sting versus Darby, you know, and Sting would then put Darby over. I mean, we came up with all these, you know, ideas for Sting going for the world title in his final match, you know, which I think would have been fitting, and like retiring as champion. I think that would have been a really emotional story. And maybe Sting doesn't feel like he's up to it, and maybe he's not up to it. So maybe that is the right course of action. But I do believe he could have had a singles match with Darby, and like Darby would have played subtle heel. Darby would have been booed. I mean, we've seen that match before. We know that match story. And yeah, it looks like Sting's going to win, but in the end, Darby does. And then afterwards, they have the big hug. Sting endorses Darby. Sting, you know, matches off or totters off into the sunset. And Darby has that on his record, that he's beaten Sting in Sting's last match. I mean, look at what it did for Baron Corbin. Or King Corbin, or whatever he was called at the time.
But say for example, because I've said this for a long time, I don't think Sting thinks that he is up to a singles match, and that's why we've not got, you know, some of the matches that we've kind of put out there in the past, you know, the MJF match and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, if Sting did feel, I can't do a singles match, it has to be a tag with Darby and I, are there other opponents for them as a team that you think would have been better, or is this the best option based on that?
Basically, any other two members of the AEW roster, with the exception of Ric Flair and Chris Jericho. Yeah, anyone else on the roster would have been better than those two. Anyone. I mean, their whole style just does not mesh or complement, or where's the chemistry between Sting and the Young Bucks? I mean, I hope I'm proven wrong on the night.
People know I feel the same way as you do about them, but I'm really trying to find something nice to say. So the only thing I've come up with...
Why do you feel like you need to say something nice about these two? I don't feel I ever need to say anything nice about them again.
No. It's not that I feel I need to say something nice about them. It's I feel like I should... I do want to go in, even though 9 times out of 10, I don't enjoy their matches, but I want to go in with some form of positivity about it. And the only thing I can think of is that they obviously will take a lot of the bumps for Sting, and they'll, you know, fly around for him, which is the good part. But to your point, the bad part of that is where's the drama going to be? Because they don't really, in my mind, and this is always a kind of 50-50 thing. Some people think they are the best in-ring psychologists that have ever existed. And
really?
Then
who are these people?
A lot of AEW fans think that. You know, a lot of AEW fans love them, but then a lot of people like us just don't resonate with that, and don't think they have great psychology, and don't buy into that.
They don't have great psychology. The psychology is, there is no psychology.
Yeah, you know? I'm the same as you. That's how I feel about them. But, you know, maybe because... I think the other thing is, say you are a Young Bucks fan, or a Young Bucks supporter or follower or whatever, right? And that you are on that side of it. I think that the other thing about this that's difficult is that they've had so many since they came back. I can't remember when they came back after the Punk thing. I think they were back.
I think it was actually November of 2022. I mistakenly said a couple of weeks ago that they'd returned in early 2023, but it was late 2022.
Well, didn't they come back at full gear and there was a graphic for them? And it was like they didn't return on TV in the build up. It was like there was a graphic, and they were like they were in the Trios title match with Omega or something.
Yeah, they had the Best of Seven series, if you remember.
Yes,
I mean it's actually easy to forget that.
Yeah, because they were all the same. So they came back at Full Gear 2022, but then I feel like, because even before all the stuff happened with Punk and things like that, I found the Young Bucks a lot more bearable, because even though their matches weren't for me, I was like, okay, it's not for me. It's fine. I can deal with it. It's on the show. But since then, I feel like they're there, they do something, then they leave. They're there, they do something, then they leave. And it's just this kind of constant flow of them going away and coming back. And every time they come back, I think they do... I know this is very biased for me to say, so it's going to sound like I've not really got any objectivity here to say this, but I feel like every time they come back, they do lose a bit of their shine that they used to have as stars. Do you know what I mean? Because they used to be fairly big stars in AEW. They were.
To me, they're totally past it. I mean, they are just so past it. I mean,
even when they came out last night, they didn't look to me like... I mean, if you were to say it to people who followed AEW 3 years ago, go right, they're, you know, Sting's final match is going to be Sting and Darby against the Young Bucks, and they're going to come out. You would imagine that when the Young Bucks came out to sort of do that stare off, or they would do that moment, that it would feel in some way important, that they walked out like, but they were going to like a Night of the Roxbury tribute night.
That's it. They were heading to the bus stop, you know, after getting a couple of kebabs at the takeaway.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, to me, the obvious answer for the final match would have been Sting and Darby against FTR. I've said that
exactly. For... Yeah, well, you know, absolutely, that would have been. And had they been tag team champions, I mean,
yeah,
that would have been. I mean, I wrote about FTR in the Alternative Year End Awards.
Yes.
You can read my thoughts in the next issue of the magazine. And, you know...
And I'm not going to say much more about them because I obviously yesterday was proofreading the magazine, so I feel like anything I say is going to sound like I'm just, you know, going on the
charity
bandwagon. If, you know, if, yeah, yeah. I'm not going to do it. But people can imagine what is said.
FTR as tag team champions playing subtle heel versus Sting and Darby Allin in Greensboro in the main event. That's a main event, or that would have been a main event. And Sting could have vowed to win the belts in his last match. And you know what? They could have won the belts. And you know what, Kenny? After Sting and Darby had won the belts, you know what could have happened? They could have declared them vacant and there could have been another tournament.
We know Tony loves a tournament.
I mean, look at all the boxes that would tick. I mean, just a box ticking exercise. I mean, the pen's going to run out of ink before you've ticked all those boxes.
I mean, the thing is, though, here's something for the Young Bucks. I mean, not that they really care or are interested in winning us over, right? But this is the prime. This is a prime thing that they could do to turn tide. If they can go out there and do something with Sting and Darby that is measured and that is. I'm not asking them to have a match from 1987 that you would see on Wrestling Challenge. That's not the, you know, because I know some people might be, what would you want them to do? Just have some sort of Iron Mike Sharp match? No, that's not it. But we're saying if there's, because Sting's, even when Sting does the crazy stuff, he still does it in the style of a match that has some psychology to it.
That's it. There's some meaning behind what he does, isn't there?
Yeah, and in his final match, you want to see. You know, I'm not. I mean, you're not going to be able to give the drama of, you know, Shawn Michaels telling Ric Flair, "I'm sorry, I love you," or anything. But there should be, you know, something where like Sting desperately wants to win this for Darby because, you know, he said it, he's his favorite tag team partner ever, and he just falls short of that last second. But for that to happen, the Bucks need to be on the same emotional level, delivering the same level of, you know, energy to have that whole scenario play out the way that it should.
And absolutely. I mean, the Young Bucks need to become tag team champions between now and March 3rd. I mean, that could, you know, add some, you know, sense of prestige to this match.
Uh-huh.
And it would mean that Sting and Darby Allin had something to vie for. And there was a reason for this match to exist. So, you know, hopefully they will. I mean, you know, I mean, just for this match, you know, and to be honest, if I was booking it, I would have Sting and Darby win the belts from Young Bucks in Sting's last match and then, you know, do the tournament. We know Tony loves the tournaments.
Yeah.
And that actually would be, you know, justifiable grounds for a tournament. If Sting were to become champion in his last match, of course he would have to vacate the belts afterwards. And then there would be a perfectly logical reason for the tournament to take place. Most of these tournaments happen for no reason at all and then just never end. But that would be one that everyone would say, yeah, you know, we understand why this is taking place. And maybe then FTR could win that and they could, you know, make some progress after their dismal last quarter of 2023.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, I think, because also what you kind of want in this last, I mean, but the thing with this thing with time, I don't want to just shit on AEW the whole time, but I mean, I think they do deserve some culpability in this particular thing. Like Sting, for example, at last week's Collision, he was on Collision with Darby and they were facing the Workhorseman, which obviously, I'm not saying you should promote a match with the Workhorseman, but you should have promoted, this is Sting's last match ever in Charlotte. And you could have sold that other 500 tickets that you hadn't sold for that event, or 700 tickets. And I don't understand why they've not went all in on the kind of idea of this is Sting's last match in this city. This is Sting's last match in this city. Like,
Yeah.
play it. Because look at Revolution. Revolution is pretty much sold out with 15,000 people.
Yes.
So you could be getting, you know, if you've got a building that seats 3,500 and you've got 2,700, then you could be filling those other 700 or 800 seats based on Sting's last match in that area. I would go. I mean, if Sting was coming to, you know, Glasgow, I mean, I know he's not, but you know, Sting's coming to the Hydro, I'd be there in a heartbeat
Yeah.
for the last time to see him in the ring.
I mean, if Sting was coming to Ashton Hall in Lancaster, I'd be there.
There you go. You'd be there, but unfortunately, that's not what's happening.
I
But
mean, Kendall Leisure Centre, I'd be there for that as well.
well, we'll see if the guy whoever's taken over from Raphael Morphy can get an in on in Cumbria before Sting leaves. Lots of kind of AEW based news today. Jeff Hardy put an Instagram post up last night that I thought was interesting and worth a bit of conversation. He basically put a graphic of last night's AEW Dynamite episode, which I have watched and I thought was a fun episode. But he wrote, "We the Hardys will not be appearing on this live show called AEW Dynamite. We the Hardys are stuck in the dimension of AEW Rampage." My question is, do you think that the Hardys are worthy of being on Dynamite? Has Jeff got a fair point here, or do you think that their performance is kind of what's landing them on Rampage?
I mean, it's numerous factors, isn't it? I mean, there's obviously the Jeff arrest, and then he had to go away for a long time, and then he returned. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about the Young Bucks losing their aura. You know, each time they have this, you know, cycle of him leaving and, you know, returning like 6 or 8 weeks later, or however many weeks they take off. You know, Jeff, when he returned last year, he didn't seem like a star anymore. I mean, there wasn't that connection there with the audience. I mean, clearly he needed to rebuild it. I mean, I don't think Matt should even be in the ring anymore. He looks like he's in a lot of pain. He looks like he's struggling. You know, if you go back to 2016 and just how he reinvented himself, it's now 2024, and he's still doing this hybrid of that character he invented back then, you know, and other characters he's played in his career. And they just feel irrelevant. They just feel inconsequential. They are not essential to each episode of Dynamite or Collision, and that is why they are on Rampage. You know, that is why they are stuck in that dimension, you know, this quagmire. So I mean, I think they could probably have one last run at the belts. You know, they seem demotivated, and understandably so. I would be as well if I were them and I worked for AEW. But it's like, I think it needs to be a combination of factors. I mean, there needs to be some creative behind them that's going to give them a reason, you know, something to strive for and a reason for people to cheer them on, you know, in pursuit of whatever it is that they're gunning for. This just feel like they're floundering. So I think a lot of, you know, it's in wrestling, sometimes you can get yourself over. We know that. This does happen. But I think when you get to the point that the Hardys are at, you need support and attention, and you need a helping hand from the booking team. And the booking team's led by Tony Khan, you know, who's, you know, not a creative person, you know, simply put, he just isn't. So I'm not sure what the way back for them is. But it needs to be, you know, like a team effort to make them matter again. That's my opinion, Kenny. What do you think?
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.
I do think it's a combination to an extent. I think the difficulty is if you're Tony Khan and you've got all these people on the roster. If I was Tony Khan and I had all these people, let's say, you know, it's today. I can't go back and change deals that I've made. I'm here today. I don't think I'm featuring the Hardys on Dynamite, to be honest, because I just don't think that they're up to par. So it's in this weird position where you're right. They feel demotivated because they're not on Dynamite, but then Tony Khan probably doesn't think they're up to par to be on Dynamite. But in that. I would imagine, I don't know this, I would imagine Jeff Hardy's on a pretty big contract compared to Matt, I would imagine.
Yeah, quite possibly, yeah. When you think about it, when he came in, he was still hot. I mean, what a blunder he made leaving WWE when he was about to receive like a run with Roman Reigns. I mean, that could have been colossal for his career. And he then
but had he stayed, you know, if he had done what he ended up doing, getting caught in a scandal for stuff that he was caught for.
Yeah, drunk driving.
Drunk driving, yeah. He then would have been, you know, that would have looked really bad for WWE if he had done that in the middle of a run with Roman, because they couldn't really
afford. Yeah, he would have done, but it's also possible in that environment he wouldn't have done it.
Yeah, true. I mean, if I was Tony Khan today, what I would do is I would find a way to split Jeff and Matt, not in a kind of a one turns on the other, but put Jeff on Dynamite and put him in a program with someone of a bigger value. And then with Matt, you know, Matt's a creative guy. He has been in the past. I would just say, look, here's the booking sheet for yourself. Try and come up with something. We'll start it on Rampage. We'll see how it goes. If it gets over, we can talk about moving it up to Dynamite. And then leave it with him, you know, and let him kind of write his own ticket. But I think Jeff needs to be separated from him. Because I think Jeff is on Rampage because the Hardys as an act are...
Stale.
Really, yeah, they're stale.
Stale, absolutely. But, yeah, I mean, I would, you know, I endorse that proposal as well, Kenny. I mean, just say to Matt, listen, Matt, you're obviously in the late evening of your career. Why don't you try something new? Come up with a new character. You did it in 2016. You can do it again in 2024. This is your last sort of money run. Okay, they could go back to WWE, but they're going to be on the Legends Raw, aren't they? You know, once a year. Yeah. There's no way that WWE, I can't imagine the WWE would bring them back and actually push them as a in-ring act again. I just don't see that happening. But yeah, Tony Khan should just say to Matt, listen, I don't have any ideas for you, obviously. You know, why not come up with something new and radical and reinvent yourself again? You know, carte blanche, just do what you want.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully they do. I mean, the big story, though, Finn, that broke overnight, I don't know if you've had a chance to see this yet this morning, but it involves our friend Mr. Jericho. And so it all started on the Jim Cornette podcast when Brian Last had said that there was a story that he wished he could talk about, which involved, so basically he said, man, there is a story I would love to tell, but I didn't get permission. But Jericho getting knocked out on his own cruise ship by someone he mouthed off to is the most incredible fucking story, but I can't talk about that today. That was what he had said. But luckily for us, people are inquisitive in wrestling media, and we've got the story. So Cassidy Haynes, who runs bodyslam.net, he had basically had the story confirmed that what happened was on Jericho's cruise in 2020... Jericho was knocked out by MVP. And that's what happened. And do you remember the story in 2022 where there was a story that went around that Jericho had basically walked away from MVP and said, I don't fight jobbers? That story had come out.
I don't recall this one, no.
So basically, there had been a story about AEW were in Houston for Dynamite and MVP was staying in the same hotel as Jericho, and they got into an argument in the lobby, and Jericho apparently at the time had walked away saying, I don't fight jobbers. But the story that Cassidy Haynes had heard was that Jericho was basically trying to get away from MVP because of what had happened before of MVP knocking him out, and that led to when he was in the lift or the elevator to basically, you know, shout out, I don't fight jobbers, as he, you know, flees to his room. He flees to his room. So, you know,
like a scalded dog.
So Jericho's not, you know, he was on Dynamite last night. They basically played his music through an entire brawl so he didn't get booed. I believe he actually wasn't getting booed that badly on the show, but they obviously, okay. I guess they felt they needed to do that. But yeah, I mean, this is not a great time for another Jericho story to come out for him, especially this one with MVP.
No, definitely not. But I mean, what can I say, Kenny? Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. That's all I can say about Jericho.
It's fun because it feels like, in a lot of ways, you know, we talked about the other stuff last week, but it does feel like a lot of stuff is kind of coming out of the woodwork now about Chris Jericho. And absolutely. If you're Jericho, you've got this podcast you do twice a week, do an episode and talk about this stuff. You know, talk about, you know, the fact that, you know, if in your mind you haven't done anything wrong at work, talk about that.
Yeah.
Talk about this MVP situation, because if you don't talk about it, this is the story that's going to be out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, MVP, you know, we know he's pre-wrestling, you know, lifestyle. You know, he's a sturdy-looking bloke. You know, he looks like he can handle himself in a situation, and it sounds like he did against Jericho. And, you know, MVP to me always comes across very level-headed. You know, I mean, obviously I didn't witness this episode or this incident between MVP and Jericho, so I don't know what provoked it, you know, what, you know, led to this KO. But I mean, from what I know about MVP, he seems pretty level-headed, and that he probably wouldn't have done this unless he was, you know, unless he'd received significant provocation. Could be wrong about that. That's just speculation. But every interview I've ever read with MVP over the last 15 years or so, well, maybe not 15 years, like 10, 11 years or so, he has always come across really balanced, because, you know, he obviously, you know, was involved in crime in his youth, you know, paid his debt to society and came out and realized that that was a very, very bad path that he was on, and was determined to turn his life around and did so. But I mean, what can you say about Jericho? I mean, hands down, the most obnoxious person I've ever interviewed in 32 years. Absolutely. I mean, the way he spoke to me in 2009, I was just astounded by just how obnoxious he was on the phone when we did that interview for, I think it was issue 189 of Power Slam. Vince was on the cover.
And is there a reason in particular? I mean, have you managed to kind of ascertain why you think? Because you interviewed him twice before, right? 1999.
I'd interviewed him in 99, and he was great. He was a joy. I mean, he was, you know, so accommodating, and I can't say enough good about that version of Chris Jericho. And that was a very frustrating time for him. He was in WCW. You know, he'd been massively underutilized that year by the company. I mean, he was deeply, deeply frustrated with the way in which his career was going. You know, he didn't say in the interview that he was going to sign with WWF, but I knew he was going to. And he knew that I knew he was going to.
Unspoken agreement.
Exactly. Very respectful. And the guy back then in 99, you know, was, I can't say enough good about him. You know, he just gave us so much time. Issue 61 of Power Slam, I thought it was a terrific interview he gave us. I didn't interview him in, I think it was late 2005. I think that was Anthony Evans interviewed him for Power Slam. And again, he was, you know, he gave us a lot of time, and I seem to remember Aunt Evans saying that he'd been, you know, he'd been, again, so accommodating, and, you know, he was, you know, just, you know, a pleasure to interview. That's my recollection of how Aunt found Chris Jericho at that point in his career. Jericho pulls for a load of photos for us. I think it's issue 139. The issue actually didn't sell very well, to be honest. But I thought the interview was really good, and Jericho did an exclusive photo shoot for Power Slam for that interview. So, you know, to go from that, you know, those experiences with him in 99 and 2005, it would have been. And then, you know, for him to behave in the way he did in 2009, I was just floored. I mean, I was really looking forward to that interview. And, you know, we started off by talking about Fozzy, which I had no interest in his band Fozzy. You know, I was into the metal scene when I was younger, you know, to this day, still, you know, listen to that type of music, but I got no interest in Fozzy. I did not want to ask him questions about Fozzy, But I knew the brief. This interview with Power Slam was happening because he was he wanted Fozzy to be promoted in the interview. So we had to talk about Fozzy in order for me to get the interview with him and then potentially ask him some questions about pro wrestling. That was the conditions under which I accepted this interview, agreed to this interview. And so I asked him, I don't know how many questions about Fozzy in the magazine, must have been six, maybe seven, maybe more. And I was respectful, about his band. And we talked about that. And then I just said to him, are you willing to talk about pro wrestling? And he was just so surly. And it was like he wasn't interested in talking about pro wrestling with me. And I just found it really odd. Because he knew who I was. He knew the magazine. He'd been interviewed about twice before. The cover of issue 61 of Power Slam appears on the front cover of his first memoir, A Lion's Tale, I believe it's called.
Mm-hmm.
So he was obviously aware of Power Slam. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe he was... no doubt I had knocked Jericho. No doubt I had knocked Jericho in Power Slam. I'm sure I had many times in the 2000s. And maybe he was aware of that. And maybe he was venting. And maybe he took offence, to my criticism of him in his matches or segments or whatever. I'm not sure why he was so bad-tempered. And that's really the way to describe him. And, he was just really off with me. Just really off with me. And just really actually quite rude at the end. And I was kind of astounded by the way the whole tone of the interview. It was really quite shocking actually. And afterwards I remember feeling, wow, he was really I thought it was totally out of order in that interview. And I've heard lots of other people who've had interaction with Jericho over the years. And, they report a similar sort of attitude from him, that he just feels like he's above everyone else, in the world almost, and just seems to be really arrogant and, unapproachable almost, and just not friendly and communicative. And, when you do an interview, you want that banter. You know it is, Kenny. You've interviewed many, many people in your life on stage and, over Skype or the phone or whatever. And, you want to strike up that rapport, don't you? And there was just none between Jericho and I, and there had been previously.
It's because when I first interviewed him in 2012, I got set up with him through Fozzy, and we did a half-hour interview, and I think I did like 5 minutes in Fozzy, 25 minutes in wrestling. He was great. And then I remember we went to interview him in person right at the Cat House in Glasgow, and you could tell he was really agitated at the idea that, that there's these Fozzy questions and the wrestling questions. I don't know if that's because the people who set it up, if he's just been like, look, I don't want to do wrestling interviews, I want to do music interviews, and then people are setting him up with wrestling people. But there's a miscommunication somewhere, and he was not great in that interview. But then, obviously we've done two tours with him and he's ended up being good. Because now I kind of know him and he kind of knows me a bit, but I've had one of those interactions as well, and it's not ideal. I mean, there's some people who you get and they're great and they're always great, and there's some people who you get who sometimes they're great and sometimes you don't know what you're going to get. But
Jericho had been around long enough in 2009 to know how the game is played. Yeah. And this was a wrestling magazine. He knew the name of the magazine. He knew who I was. And he knew that after I'd asked questions about the band, he had to know that I wasn't interested in the band. That in order for us to promote Fozzy, he was also going to have to talk about pro wrestling. So, I mean, he had to know that. I mean, it's an arrangement, isn't it? It's a bargain. If you do this one thing, then you get this other thing in return.
Yeah.
And, he was just rude and he was just bad tempered. And I was really taken aback by the way he spoke to me, Kenny. And I don't consider myself to be a shrinking violet, Kenny.
No, you're far from that. Well, listen, before we go, I do want to ask you one last thing. The Twitter sort of back and forth between Tony Khan, Jinder Mahal, and everyone else this week was kind of mad. You know, Tony Khan was talking, because basically what happened was Raj Giri, who used to own Wrestling Inc., he had tweeted out something about a photo of Seth and Jinder from Raw, and had said they actually do have history because Seth defeated Jinder to become the first NXT champion back in the day. And then the USA Network had replied to Raj Giri saying, yeah, but what about the cage match rating? Which obviously is something...
It was a joke, wasn't it? It was mocking Khan, wasn't it?
Mocking Tony Khan. And Tony Khan, you know, and there's part of me that does respect, but he just doesn't really give a shit and just kind of comes back. So he decided to come back at this and said that, you know, Jinder's not in a match in a year, and... You know, Jinder's not in a match in a year, and
hasn't won a match in a year.
Yeah, hasn't won a match in a year, and now he's getting a title shot. And then somebody had kind of, and then where is it here? Let me get the exact verbiage here, because then somebody came back to Tony Khan and said, "Well, you know, Abaddon just got a title shot after being off AEW TV for a year," and then Eric Bischoff and Tony Khan started going at it, and Bischoff said, "You know." Is this true, or are you just a bot? And then Tony Khan said, no, not true at all. Abaddon returned to AEW and they won a four-way match on TNT against other wrestlers. Their title shot was completely different than someone going a full year losing every match they're in and getting a title shot without a win. And then at the same... So, and Tony's whole thing apparently was that there was an online outrage about Hook having a TV match with Samoa Joe.
Yeah.
Which I don't really understand, because I just think that's fine for a TV match. I don't really know why people are getting so annoyed about it. But at the same time, he was saying, why is there so much outrage about Hook having a match with Samoa Joe?
He was double standards. That was Tony's point, wasn't it?
Yes. He was saying, you know, Hook's like 28-1. He's won all of his matches and he's going to get a match with Samoa Joe. Jinder's getting this title match on TV and he's won nothing, but yet nobody seems to care. It's double standards. And then that's when Bischoff started getting involved. And I mean, Tony actually did have some good rebuttals to Eric Bischoff, when he said, you know, reading would be your friend, Eric, which was about the Abaddon thing. And then Eric Bischoff started going back at him, and then Tony Khan like responded with a photo of Joan Collins from the 80s, saying, "Go away, you miserable has-been." And then Bischoff retweets that with a photo of Bischoff on Dynamite from 2020, but it says in his lower third, "groundbreaking exec." And Bischoff says, "groundbreaking, miserable has been." And then Jinder's tweeting, "who the fuck is Hook?" And then Hook's tweeting, "who's Jinder?" So, I mean, everybody got some pretty good zingers in on it. Yeah. But, I mean, you kind of just have to laugh, right? Because it's all a bit mad.
It is. It's like a bunch of school kids, isn't it? I mean, squabbling in the playground.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what it is. It's like, or at best, a bunch of like geeks on some forum, you know, just like, you know, flaming each other, you know, just like blasting it. That's it. You know, it's like, I've got you with that zinger. You know, it's like, you know, that's it. You're finished after, you know, that put down. You can't come back from that one. And I just don't know. I mean, maybe this is what Twitter or X was invented for, Kenny. For people to engage in these, you know, sort of futile sort of arguments. I don't know, mate. I mean, if everyone's amused by it, which they were, then I guess in the sense, what's the harm? I mean, I thought Tony Khan looked... I mean, he did look kind of a bit like a dweeb, didn't he? Just bringing this up. I mean, to me, the real winner here was Jinder, because this led to a groundswell of support for Jinder.
Don't hinder Jinder.
I mean, look at this, between, you know, the segment with The Rock on the day one Raw, you know, and Tony Khan promoting him on X. I mean, Jinder Mahal has never been more popular in his entire career, Kenny. Never been more relevant.
I mean, the thing, Jinder actually does have banter, you know, because the whole thing, I mean, I remember in 2017, And obviously we'd been podcasting, and I was ripping the guy to absolute shreds on the podcast. And I go to the SummerSlam press morning, and there he is with the belt. And I'm going, like, I can't do an interview with him and not mention it in some way. So then I say to him, I said, listen, I've not. And I said this to him in person, and I don't think you would ever have another scenario where I would say to the WWE world champion this, but I went, look, I've knocked you on the podcast a bit. So, you know, you should have a go at me on when we're on. You know, just sort of be like, oh, you're not happy that I'm the champion? And if you go back and watch that interview, I roll my eyes at him and he like kind of rips into me and goes, oh, you're not happy that I'm the champion? You know, you're not a gender supporter? And then I ended up getting asked by people at WWE to do a sit down with him. And we had a whole back and forth thing, and he was a great sport about all of it. He was really good fun about all of it. And I think I don't want to say he won me. Oh, he did win me over. He did win me over, actually, because he was willing to have a laugh. You know, and there's a great moment where on one of the videos where he hands me a toy belt and tells me that's the closest I'll ever get to a WWE belt, and he thought of me when he saw it. So he was up for a lot of fun with it. So I think that he's not, I mean, Jinder Mahal is not under any illusion that he is a main event superstar. Like, he's not.
Yeah, he knows his place, doesn't he? He knows that he was in over his head when he was champion. He has to know that.
Yeah, and he understood, and you know, the whole thing of him even saying, and he did have to take down the message that said who's Hook, because I guess somebody told him, look, don't engage with it or whatever. But you know, enough people we all saw it, so we were all able to go, okay, he's having a laugh. So
that's it. I mean, he's got a sense of humour, and you need a sense of humour. And that's the thing that Tony Khan, well, one of the many things that Tony Khan lacks is a sense of humour. And I think that's very important. You know, we all need that to get ourselves through the day. So,
But you know what? If Tony Khan's going to be I find Tony Khan on Twitter quite entertaining when he has these kind of sassy comebacks and stuff. But to me, if that's the way that you are, be that in these media interviews. Because now nobody watches these media interviews because he never actually gives an answer to anything.
Yeah.
He just, you know, goes around in circles. But I'd respect him much more if somebody went, oh, you know, what do you think of, I mean, obviously you can't say anything about TV deals or whatever, but like, if he said, if somebody asked about Punk, just have him go, oh God, don't start me. I can't go into it. Like, just give us something where you feel human rather than just kind of going, I appreciate the question, but you know, I think you should just tune into Dynamite tonight to see the best wrestlers in the world and blah, you know, give us something else. But
Definitely. I mean, you've got I think, you know, sense of humor and making light of things when it's appropriate goes a long way.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, more people would warm to him as a person and a promoter if he did that in public.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, well, can I just make one correction there?
Yes.
I said that Chris Jericho was the most obnoxious person I had ever interviewed. That was true in 2009, but obviously Vince Russo took that title in 2023. So Chris Jericho is the second most obnoxious person I've interviewed in 32 years.
Yeah, I mean, the Russo thing, I mean, in some ways, I'm glad it happened because, you know, we got to see that he's actually not. I mean, there's loads of people. Even, I mean, I know Bischoff was kind of short with you over the question about, you know, where were you in the 90s or whatever. But, you know, he was giving you the answers. He was going, right, okay, I'll answer you however I feel like answering you. And you had the back and forth. But with Russo, it's like he hung up a call because you wouldn't agree with him about modern wrestling that really didn't have much to do with him. You know, wild.
Let's not go into it. I had so many really interesting questions for him as well. And, you know, obviously he hung up on me. he left the meeting.
And he probably would have actually, if he had done the full interview, he probably would have come out of it looking quite good. But
I think so. Yeah. I mean, some of the questions I had for him were obviously challenging, but there were some really complimentary ones as well. And I think it's a real shame that we didn't get to that. And, you know, but hey-ho, that was the way it was. But no, I just wanted to mention that, Jericho, at the time, in 2009, yes, the most obnoxious person I had ever interviewed, but Vince Russo now holds that title.
Yeah. The weird thing is, if you look at guys like Bruce Pritchard and Eric Bischoff, they've made a lot of money off of doing podcasts where a lot of times they have to talk about their failures and they have to at least talk about them. They may not admit to everything, or I mean, they don't admit to much at all, but I mean, it's entertaining. Whereas with Russell, he instead what he did was, because you know Conrad Thompson's a pretty good guy to kind of have a jab here or there,
yeah.
If they're trying to sell their special blend of BS,
yeah.
But Russell instead has put himself in his own little island where he can just say what he wants with nobody ever challenging him,
yeah.
And you know, in life, I think if whether it's your friends or your family or your work colleagues or whatever, putting yourself in a scenario where you can just say what you want and nobody can ever challenge you is a really dangerous place to be, I think, because...
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
You lose clarity.
Yeah, it's like, I'm a god.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, don't you dare question me. And I think, you know, that's... Yeah, it's not good for you, and it's certainly, you know, it's not good really for your audience either, because they're not hearing or seeing the best of you because you're not being challenged.
No. Listen, that's all the time we've got for today. I thought today was one of our best podcasts we've done in a while, actually. Just lots of good discussions. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. And we'll be recording an overrun for Patreon, where we're going to go through issue 8 of Power Slam with Shawn Michaels and a glorious mullet on the cover. and we'll be doing some questions that didn't quite make the mag. So do go check him out on Patreon at patreon.com/insideropes. And of course, you can pre-order issue 41 of Inside Ropes magazine, with The Rock on the cover, the hoops that were jumped to make this cover happen, which was very funny. But yes.
Wish we could tell you more about that, but we probably better just keep our traps shut on that one.
Yeah, let's just discretion is the better part of valor, is the phrase. But yeah, thank you for all your support, everybody, as always, and we'll talk to you soon. If I am sad tonight,
why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.